Friends, today's subject is Shila, character and spiritual integrity. This is the second paramita. We have already dealt with the first paramita, Dana, a few days ago. Now, we have to remember that we are talking of paramitas. Paramitas are transcendental virtues. So, in fact, we are not thinking in terms of the ordinary meanings of these words, but the perfection of virtues which are denoted by these words. And the perfection of virtues is something which is a little difficult to comprehend, but we can understand it if we look at the word dana. For instance, in the ordinary world, dana simply means giving. Very often giving, donating money. From a beggar, a 1 rupee coin, to a big donation of lakhs of rupees to build a hospital or something of the kind. So, by and large, dana is looked upon as monetary donation. And now, dana in the Voice of the Silence is defined as the key of charity and love immortal. Now this charity is not charity in the sense of throwing something away at somebody. This is what we quite often think of charity, giving something away to somebody without really a consideration of the person or the institution to which it is given. When you give something, you have to give it with reverence, as it were, to the institution or to the person to whom you are giving it. So, it is the key of charity and love, immortal love. So, all these paramitas are perfected virtues. That is something to be remembered. And now, even if we look at dana as something which is a donation given to others, and then come to Shila, we will probably realize that there is a lot of sense in putting dana first. Because dana is other-directed. It is not self-regarding. It is other-directed. It is consideration for others. It is thought for others. It is caring for others. So, it is other-directed, not self-directed. Of course, this does not mean that you cannot direct spiritual discipline to yourself. Of course, you have to direct it to yourself. But that comes next, as it were. What is enjoined is that the first step is to benefit mankind. The first step is to benefit mankind. And the second is to practice the 6 glorious virtues. So the first step, as it were, is also enjoined in the first key, namely dana, benefit mankind. Now this benefit normally in the world is understood as giving gifts or giving donations, but as we know, it has been defined much more broadly in the religious discourses. And now, Shila we are considering as in the sense in which it is linked to character. Now, the normal thought is that we are born with a character. It is inborn in us. We bring it with us. And it is not totally untrue. We do bring some character with us, and if we look at the behavior of children, we will notice that the children of the same parents even are born with different characters. They are not all of one character. They have brought something from the past, and this is a character which is born with them. Nevertheless, we need not think that we have to go through our entire life with this character which we have brought from previous lives. Sometimes, without any external change in circumstances, some of the children seem to undergo a complete or a total change in their character. Some of the children seem to continue with their character, and that character becomes stronger and stronger. This again is something which is not easy to explain, but the student has noticed that this seems to happen. Some children at a very young age, 5-6, seem to change their nature, seem to change their character, while others don't. We are not talking necessarily of children, but in the spiritual sense, we are all children. We can change our character. That is something which we have to understand. We can change our character, and how do we achieve this? What kind of a character do we want is something, once again, which may have come a little from previous lives, but we have free will this life, and this life also we can decide that this is something we want to do, this is something which we do not want to do. Now in theosophy, we very often use these particular lines. We say, sow a thought, reap an act. Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. But we don't stop there. We say, sow a character, reap a destiny. So, actually we go towards destiny. We don't stop at character, we go towards destiny. And in the title, instead of saying character and destiny, we have used the word character and spiritual integrity, because that is the destiny which we should all aim at. That should be our aim, and therefore the word used is not destiny, because people's destinies may be very different. They may choose different destinies, but the destiny which should be chosen is spiritual integrity. Now, the character or the destiny is the formation of everyone. Everyone forms his or her own character. And it is formed through what? It is formed through a thought followed by an act which becomes a habit, and then that leads to a character. But in fact, even this may not consistently happen. This is something also we have to take into account. Suppose you have thoughts, but they are not thoughts in one direction. On one day you have one thought, on another day you have another thought. One day you act in one way, another way you act another way. Take a simple example. Children, suppose somebody is 13, 14 years old and he shows a certain amount of fondness for cricket. He plays cricket for 5, 6 days. Then he says, I am fed up of this. I will play volleyball. Then he, another week, he says, no, I think I'll take up tennis. Then he says, no, I will take up some other sport. So he has continuously changing thoughts in his mind, and therefore his act is changing all the time. Now this is a very simple example, but many of us have stray thoughts, random thoughts, and we act on these random thoughts and do very different things from day to day. We don't pursue single-mindedly a particular goal. Unless we try to single-mindedly pursue a particular goal, though we may have thoughts and though we may act upon them, habits may not get formed, or we may form the bad habit of flitting from one to another. That also can be a habit, and certainly anything like a character will not be formed. Even in such matters as cricketers, tennis players, singers, musicians, players, these people have for years together set themselves to a particular goal. And having set themselves to a particular goal, they have achieved, or they have arrived at a certain point, and this is what their destiny consists of. So everybody is free to have some kind of a concentrated thought, act, habit, character, or something which is changeable, impulsive, stray, random, and no formation of character will then take place. Now, for having a line of life's meditation, it is very necessary that we have some kind of a concentration, thoughts which are of the same kind, actions which are of the same kind, and therefore habits and character which is formed. Therefore, what is important is consistency. What is important is perseverance. Consistency and perseverance only will give us the right habits and the right character, and therefore the right kind of destiny. Now, in the case of character, another thing which is very often talked about is that some people have a strong character, some people have a weak character. Now, once again, it will so happen that people who consistently follow a particular path of action are likely to acquire strength at least in that particular direction. But apart from that, it is true that there is a distinction between a strong character and a weak character. And this may happen because people are born with strong will or not with such a strong will. Now, the strength of character can also be improved. Just as muscular strength can be improved, bodily strength can be improved, strength of character can also be increased. And there are even schools which tell you how to improve your motivation, how to improve your personality, how to make your character strong, and so on and so forth. This does happen. Only the other day, the student read in the Times of India that Shobha Day, which is a familiar figure to most of you, met Dhirubhai Ambani, and she wanted to ask him what message he had for her sons. What kind of virtue should they establish in themselves and strengthen? And Dhirubhai Ambani was, it was a public kind of a meeting, and many people wanted to meet Dhirubhai Ambani. So she had very little time, and Dhirubhai Ambani could only say one word. So he said what they should have is guts. So strength of character. So the whole thing is geared to what? The whole thing is geared to just strength. Strength of character or strength of will. For what purpose this strength is to be used is given no consideration whatever. Or rather, it is assumed that this strength of character is to be garnered for material ends. Because what else can Dhirubhai Ambani think of? He can think only of how to become wealthy, how to become successful in business, and so on. So this was the mantra he was passing on to others. So this strength of character, strong character or weak character, a distinction is made like this, but it is not realized that strength of the character is an instrument which has to be used. And like any instrument which can be used for good or for bad purposes, strength can be used for a good purpose, or it can be used for not such a good purpose, or even for a bad purpose. Even criminals have considerable strength of character. It is not as if they don't have strength of character. They are loyal to the gang. It's not as if they don't have any kind of virtue. But their aim is a wrong aim. They are not following the right aim. So it is not enough to talk in terms of just strong character, how to strengthen one's character, and so on and so forth. So with this strong character, Another thing which comes to mind is means which are used for achieving ends. And in the case of these means which are used for achieving ends, again, in today's world, most people think that if you have to achieve anything, if you are to achieve anything which is of any value, you can use any means whatsoever. What matters is achieving the end. And people go to any length to achieve the end which they desire. They feel that the end is noble. And to achieve the noble end or to achieve the right end, what does it matter if we use the wrong means? Because after all, the people on whom the wrong means are going to be used are bad themselves. The example is tehelka.com. So what they were doing was that they were exposing the corruption in very high places. So they felt that they were doing a very good thing. Right? So they felt they were doing a very good thing, and what means they used was immaterial. Of course, people always think that the means which they were going to use would not come to light. There is always that. They always feel that what they are doing will not be noticed by anybody. Criminals also feel that they will not be caught. So, means used were the means which we have come across in the papers. And a debate has been going on whether these means have been right means or not right means. And everybody has to think about whether these means have been right or not right. Now, getting away from practical examples, let us look at what Shila means. In Patanjali Yoga Sutra, in giving the Ashtanga Yoga, it begins with Yama and Niyama. Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. Those are the eight limbs of yoga, of which the first two are Yama and Niyama. Now the Yamas are restraints or forbearances or don'ts. Taking into account human nature, even as far back as Patanjali, the don'ts were given first. What people should not do, that was meant for everybody. The Yamas had to be practiced by absolutely everybody. It was not only to be practiced by people who were walking on the spiritual path, they were to be practiced by each and everybody. So there were these Yamas and there were Niyamas. Niyamas are the positive acts which one takes upon oneself as disciplines and one practices them. Now it is interesting to see that people like Patanjali and Buddha have given almost the same yamas and, you know, the same don'ts and do's. What should be done, what should not be done, and what should be done. Patanjali says that the don'ts are violence, or rather it is put differently, what should be practiced is ahimsa, satya, asteya, brahmacharya, aparigraha. The opposite should not be practiced. So these are the yamas. And niyamas are shaucha, santosha, tapa, swadhyaya and pranidhana. So non-violence, truth, not stealing, brahmacharya, which is normally translated as continence, but actually it should be taken as walking in Brahma, following the path of Brahma, walking in the footsteps of Brahma. So it is much more than continence, and aparigraha is non-covetousness. Then there are the niyamas, purifications of body, speech and mind, contentment, austerity, study of scriptures and study of oneself, swadhyaya. Man, know thyself. You have to also always be undergoing some kind of a self-examination. Not just study scriptures, but try and apply these scriptures to yourself and see how far you can practice them, how far you go, where you fail, and so on. Study of oneself as well as study of scriptures, and pranidhana, devotion to the Supreme Spirit, devotion to the highest possible deity. So these are the things which are given by Patanjali, and very similar things were enjoined by Buddha. First, of course, is non-violence, and then follows the not taking the not given, not stealing. It is not taking the not given, which applies not only to stealing material things, but you know, taking other people's time, taking other people's energy, encroaching upon their space, encroaching upon their privacy, whatever. The not taking what is not given. Not taking what is not given. Then, of course, sexual purity, truth, and not letting one's mind get confused through intoxicants. Not letting one's mind get confused through the infusion of intoxicants. These were the panchashilas. What should not be done. But of course, no great spiritual teacher stopped by just saying, don't do this. They always gave the positive as well. So the positives there are. Now it is to be remembered that the Buddha once again gave to the laity the panchashila, but he gave to the bhikkhus, the practicing mendicants, 10 shilas. And the 10 shilas, the first 3 were common, but there were 4 shilas pertaining to vak and 3 pertaining to mind. In the case of the panchashila, the first 3 pertain to mind, to body, the 4th pertains to vak, and the 5th pertains to mind. And these are comparatively, what shall I say, obvious. But in the case of the bhikkhus, a more strict discipline was enjoined. Of which, of course, vak is considered very important indeed. And vak, vacha, is considered speech, is considered very important indeed. And in the case of speech, the Buddha did not give to the bhikkhus only not lying, but he also said that harsh speech should always be avoided. He also said that needless continuous chatter is to be avoided, and any kind of gossip mongering is to be avoided. So all these things are to be avoided, because you can pollute, as it were, your faculty of speech by these things. Not telling lies or telling truth is something very important, but it is not really enough. You have to go further forward. This not telling truth can be very, very troublesome also. Some people can take it so literally as to feel that they are entitled to tell the truth at any time to anybody, and so on and so forth. This is not the case. It is only when you are called upon to say something that you have to tell the truth. You don't have to sort of stand at the crossroads and shout the truth, which is unpleasant to many people unnecessarily. This is not something which is expected, but many people interpret it as this. And in some of the local languages, it is said that I told him frankly, I am a frank and truthful person. I believe in one blow and 2 pieces. But one blow and 2 pieces is not something which is advisable. Anyway, so speech disciplines were given, and they were considered very important. And similarly, mind disciplines are given, which are not coveting, not hating, and avoiding delusion. Now, avoiding delusion is something which is extremely difficult. We are all here because of delusion. If we had no delusion, we would have become Jivan Muktas. We would have reached Nirvana. Since none of us have reached Nirvana as yet, we are subject to delusion. But all the other disciplines, it is possible to pursue. It is possible to pursue them. One may not fully succeed, one may succeed. Some extent at least one can succeed. Now the virtues are not to be practiced out of fear. This is something which is very important. Many of the virtues are practiced by most of the people through the fear of society or through the fear of God. The fear of society is expressed in terms such as, if I do this, what will people say? If I behave like this, what will so and so say? Because so and so will not think highly of me, I cannot do this. So this is actually simply conforming to what the society expects of you. Now there is no harm in conforming to a certain extent, but if you are practicing virtues through fear of society, then it may happen sooner or later that for some reason the fear of society or the fear of police or whatever it is drops away. Circumstances may happen in such a manner that you begin to feel that you owe nothing to the society, that it has done you no good, that it has only harmed you. Therefore, why should you now not harm society? Most of the criminality is born out of this. People are not necessarily born criminals, but in their young life something happens and they begin to feel that they have to take revenge on society, or at least that part of society, that section of society which brought misery and problems on them. So they were previously behaving virtuously through fear of society or through fear of police. They were not behaving virtuously because they believed in the virtue. Now it is important for us to examine whether we believe in the virtue or not, and whether we believe in the virtue inside of ourselves or through the fear of society or through the fear of God, even the fear of God. Because which God will you fear? You will, really speaking, fear only an external God. If you really believe that God is within you, why will you fear it? The God which is within you is the voice of your conscience, and you will not fear the voice of your conscience. Hopefully you will hear the voice of your conscience. Even if you don't hear the voice of the conscience and behave accordingly, you will not be frightened. You will not feel that therefore the God is going to throw a stone upon you and you will die, or something terrible of that kind will happen. You feel that, all right, this is what conscience was telling me, but that at this moment it was not really possible to behave in this manner. Therefore, I did not behave according to what my conscience was telling me. You will not be afraid. So, fear of God is, normally speaking, the fear of outside God. So, it is important to check whether you are behaving in a virtuous manner because of the fear of God or the fear of society or whatever. Now, a very interesting example comes to the student's mind that, all these relate to law, and we all consider ourselves law-abiding citizens. But we know that when we cross the road, we don't always stop with the lights which tell us to go or tell us to stop. And an example comes to the mind of the student that one particular student stopped when it said stop and would not go till the light turned green. And the policeman said to this person that in the last 2 hours you are the only person who looked at the signal and who abided by the signal. No one, not one single person in the last 2 hours did it. So this tells us quite a lot about how law abiding we are. Now it is also important for us to realize that virtues are not to be practiced only by suppressing wrong desires. If you have a wrong desire, it is good to suppress it. I mean, you have to suppress it. You cannot, give full sway to it. So, is it all right? One can say, you had the wrong desire, you got very angry, you wanted to slap somebody, but you stopped yourself from slapping somebody. So far, so good. But it is neither very far nor very good. You have to go much farther than that. You realize that you have suppressed the wrong desire, but you have neither conquered it nor mastered it. As a matter of fact, even conquering it or mastering it is not enough. Conquering it or mastering it sounds like a fight with that desire. Wrong desire, but you are undertaking a fight with that desire. What you have to do is practice the opposite. What you have to do is allow the opposite to arise in your mind and allow it to grow. The opposite of anger is friendliness or love. Now, how to make friendliness or love to grow in the place of anger, if not immediately, at least after some interval, is something which every one of us should think about. Now, about this particular student had a certain experience. And this is a personal experience, but it might ring a bell. This student was annoyed with a friend of hers because that friend of hers was not responding to her, meaning this student, in the time of need of this student. So therefore, this student got very angry with the friend. And she nurtured this anger for a long time. This friend is not paying me any attention. She is not doing anything. I am so helpless. I am so needy. Can't she see this? And so on and so forth. And this anger wouldn't go away. This anger remained and remained. Then what happened? The friend was absorbed in something else. The friend was absorbed in her own affairs. So therefore, I mean, she was not doing it out of any kind of enmity. She was doing it out of, you know, being absorbed in her own affairs. Then her own affairs came to an end, and then that friend started to be kind. When that friend started to be kind, this anger disappeared of its own. This anger which was seething in this student just plain disappeared. And then the student realized that actually what she should have done is she should have been kind, she should have been generous, she should have been helpful, she should have made the first step towards this friend, and maybe the anger would have disappeared right at the beginning. Maybe the anger wouldn't have remained. So the real answer to anger is the opposite of anger, and to have a thought and to perform some act of generosity, kindliness towards the person with whom you are angry, without expectation of any kind of immediate change of heart. This is very important. That friend may or may not respond, because that friend may still be quite busy in her own problems. But performing a good act, a generous act, a kindly act, will do you good if you are angry. Remember that almost all the evils of the world are a result of anger and greed. And very often the frustration of greed leads to anger. And therefore most of the evils are a result of anger. And therefore anger is something which we have to deal with. Now we have to practice all these yama and niyamas, or all these disciplines which we take upon ourselves. Again, it is important to remember that the virtues are not to be practiced in order to gain merit and store it up, and so that it will be useful for future births
or merit is not to be gained so that you begin to feel superior to other people, how I am much better than so and so, how I don't get angry when somebody else gets angry, how I am not greedy and so on and so forth. This feeling of superiority is something which is to be carefully watched, because this is ego-centrical, egoistical, and it is important to avoid egoism. Now all this is in a sense considerably on this particular plane, our plane, ordinary plane of ordinary behavior. And the plane of ordinary behavior is not something to be neglected. It is extremely important. We most of the time are on the ordinary plane. Nevertheless, we have also to take into account the idea of spiritual integrity. Now, ordinary integrity or integration of our efforts and our energies is something which we have taken into account. If we have concentrated thoughts, perform acts which are consistent of a certain nature, then definite habits are formed, definite character will be developed, and you will reach a definite destiny. So this is how people achieve things in life, ordinary life, not spiritual life. This is how people become cricketers, musicians, artists, painters, whatnot, because they have concentrated their thoughts, acts, habits. Now, what is meant by spiritual integrity? Now, spiritual integrity will begin to develop. We are at the beginning, so let us look at how it begins to develop. It will begin to develop when you patiently and with love teach your heart to leave anger and greed behind and love your fellow beings and work for the betterment of other beings, practice positive virtues in as natural, as spontaneous a manner, being patient with yourself and being patient with others, not expecting results, but putting a lot of energy, putting a lot of effort in your thoughts, in your acts, and so on. If this is what you try to do continuously, without selfish motives, without selfish purposes, then such integration, spiritual integration, will have begun to take place. Arriving at mastery, a complete spiritual integration, is not an easy job. But altruism, continuously turning towards others, having the thought of someone else in mind, the betterment of someone else in mind, how can I help somebody else, is something which will slowly lead you towards spiritual integration. Now, what is important here is that the distinction between I and the other begins to be less and less important. It begins to blur. It will not disappear immediately, but at least it will begin to become less and less. So this is something which one has to keep in mind. And in this context, the student would like to relate a story. The story is that of a thief, a bandit. There was a thief, a bandit, in the previous era, who had a change of heart. We are all familiar with bandits who undergo a change of heart. And he arrived at a Buddhist monastery and he told the master of that monastery that he has had a change of heart and he wants to enter the monastery and change his life completely. The person who was in charge of the monastery, the foremost bhikkhu, he said that you have led a life of tremendous vice, and before I admit you, I have to give you some kind of a test. So tell me that apart from banditry, in what do you have some skill? So the bandit actually doesn't have much skill in anything else, but he sort of scratches his head and so on, and he said, well, I can play chess. Then the bhikkhu says, very good. And he says, the head bhikkhu says, very good. And he says that we have a bhikkhu who plays very good chess. So I will call him and you play chess with him. The one who loses will lose his head. He will die. So he calls this very old bhikkhu. The bhikkhu is extremely old, but he is an extremely good chess player. He is an extremely good chess player. So the bhikkhu arrives, the old bhikkhu, and this thief, they sit down and they begin to play chess. The old bhikkhu is so confident that he is good, that to begin with he begins to play not very carefully. But the bandit is afraid of his life, so he plays very, very carefully, and the old bhikkhu begins to lose. So when he begins to lose, the old bhikkhu concentrates. And the old bhikkhu, once he starts to concentrate, the old bhikkhu begins to win. When the old bhikkhu is winning, he has time, because the bandit is taking time for every move. The old bhikkhu, being a master, doesn't need quite that much time. He just glances at the bandit and he sees beads of perspiration on his head, and he sees fear in his eyes, and he feels that this bandit has had a change of heart. This bandit is young. I am old. I have practiced the virtues and I have led a spiritual life for many, many years. There is a lot of merit to my credit. The bandit should have a chance. And then, without letting on that he is doing it purposely, gradually he plays in such a manner as to lose. So the old bhikkhu, who is so good, actually loses the game. And the bandit gets a chance. I will not tell you how the story ends or what the story signifies, but this is, I can only say that this is something which points to what is meant by spiritual integration. Time for questions. Difficult question. So, we firmly believe in the law of cause and effect, in the law of karma. Because we firmly believe in the law of karma, when we perform any act, we are very aware that the act will have consequences, and the consequences may not pertain only to this life, or they may not pertain to this life, they may pertain to forthcoming lives. Are we aware of the fact that there are many people in the world, many, many, many people in the world who are performing excellent acts, good acts, and who do not believe in the law of karma? who are not doing it for the sake of gaining merit and for the sake of therefore amassing merit or for the sake of for the fear of being punished. This student has met and read about people who have no faith in karma or reincarnation, but have spent their entire lives doing good for others. And this student has wondered, who is spiritually more advanced? This student is not really able to give a definite answer. But it looks as if people who do not believe in the law of karma, in the law of reincarnation, though this student feels that their lack of faith or belief is wrong, feels that probably their spiritual merit is higher. They are not expecting a reward. They are doing it without expectation of any reward to themselves. So is perhaps their merit higher than the merit of somebody who feels that because of the law of karma, I must not perform wrong acts? This is a question which each one of us has to answer for oneself. The student can't answer it for others. We have to answer it for ourselves. We put the question to ourselves. We all know that Mother Teresa, being born a Christian, did not believe in reincarnation. She spent all her life doing...